Welcome to Hey YA. From great new books to favorite classic reads, new stories to the latest in on-screen adaptations, Hey YA is here to elevate the exciting world of young adult lit. Hey YA is a book riot podcast hosted by Erica Azafetti and me, Tirza Price. We are recording this on September 8th. Hello, Erica.
Hi, how are you?
I am great. How about you?
I'm doing well. I feel like we always talk about the weather. I want it to be like fall temperatures, even though technically fall hasn't started, but I'll survive. I don't know how things are over around your neck of the woods, but it's like still kind of hot over here for no reason.
You know, we are escaping the horrible heat wave that seems like the rest of the country is going through right now, and it is feeling appropriately fall-like, like highs in like the upper 60s, and
wow,
yeah, I'm into it.
That's amazing. I'm happy for you, friend.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. It's not quite cold enough for me to give up my Birkenstocks and, you know, put on the sweaters, but they have been, you know, pulled out from the boxes, and I'm thinking about it, so.
It has begun.
It has.
The fallening.
Yes, the fallening, which sounds like, you know, we're falling or something, but, you know, it's very autumnal around here already.
Autumnal, one of my favorite adjectives.
Yes, it's such a good one.
Amazing, so good. Amazing. I know before we started recording, I was telling you about how my cat had like a rager last night, like a little party without me. I woke up to toys strewn everywhere, one of them across my person in bed.
I'm impressed that she didn't wake you up.
Yeah, that probably, she actually did wake me up by like, she like bites my hand. It's a behavioral thing I've tried to work on. So like, she was partying pretty hard and she did bite me and wake me up, but she didn't wake me up with the toy.
Oh my God.
Yeah, she's terrible. I read somewhere that you like, when they bite you, you kind of like scream or like, you know, yelp or something so they know it hurts. But when I do that, I feel like she just bites me harder. So I don't know.
Oh.
Vindictive.
My cat, Dolly Parton, she, when she gets into a mood, she'll, you know, like dig her claws into me or she'll start biting me. And I know it's because she's like, oh, we're playing. And that's how like she would play with her brothers. But I'm like, no, you can't play like that with me. And sometimes it's hard. Like I have to like swat at her with a book to get her to like let go.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I still kind of love her.
I like how you swat at her with a book. It's keeping with Book Riot. Fitting.
She's a demon, but I do like her. So
the demon I live with. That's a book title.
Exactly. That's everybody who has a cat. They would get it. So.
Yeah. They understand little demons. But yes.
Yes. Well, we won't just talk about cats today. We will talk about books. And I'm excited about this news story that we have because it's so fascinating and nerdy. And if you like publishing insider stuff and like history, this is a really fascinating story. So it is a link to a radio show, and it is about the writer Sarah Elizabeth, who is the author of The Art of Fantasy, which comes out this month. And she basically has, like, it's this book with like all the art of fantasy novels and books from, like, you know, the last probably 100 years. And she wanted to include the iconic A Wrinkle in Time cover. So even if you've never read A Wrinkle in Time, if you've probably seen this cover, especially if you were like, you know, Gen X or millennial, it's A Wrinkle in Time, the 1977 version. It was like the mass market Dell paperback edition. Actually, it was 1976, excuse me. And it has like the creepy centaur man, but he like it's also so creepy. Has wings and then like the red eyes. And there's like this weird green sort of like alien landscape. And this was the cover that was like in my school library. And let me tell you, I avoided this book for so many years because I was like, it's so creepy looking. It's scary. I don't like hard sci-fi. And like A Wrinkle in Time is sci-fi, but I would say it's not hard sci-fi. And so, yeah, I was in high school before I picked up this book because I did not like this cover. But whether you like it or you hate it, it is very distinctive.
Yes.
And yeah, so, and it's weird. And I don't necessarily think that it matches like the story, but I think it very doesn't. Much, it doesn't at all. No. It doesn't. Thank you for confirming.
No, yeah.
But it was a pretty influential cover because it was an influential book. And yeah. So this author, Sarah Elizabeth, wanted to include the cover in her book on the art of fantasy. And so she had to find out who painted it because it's a painting. And she was like Googling it and she couldn't figure out who the illustrator was. And so this like just led her on like this insane sort of journey to find out who painting that ended up on the cover of this book. And it was really wild because like it was 1976 that this book came out. Like Madeleine L'Engle, of course, has passed. And like everybody who worked on this book, almost everybody who worked on this book is like no longer with us. Mm-hmm. And like nobody knew who illustrated this cover. And she actually did get a hold of the publisher. And the publisher was like, oh, those are old files. We didn't keep those.
Wow.
But mild spoiler alert, she does figure out who illustrated the cover. But you should definitely listen to the story or you can read the transcript. It's very engaging, very interesting. I'm very impressed. She is quite the sleuth. So, yeah, definitely. Like, that was just kind of a delightful little news story.
A cute little bookish news story in the corner of book world. I do remember this cover. It's funny. We read A Wrinkle in Time for class. And it had a different cover, probably because that one would scare the bejesus out of us. We were like 10.
All the parents would be like, what is my child reading?
What do you have my kid reading, bro? Like, come on. But I do still remember, I was just trying to link to the picture that I was familiar with. I do still remember this cover, though. It's like deep in my subconscious.
Yeah.
Probably because of like when I passed by it in the school library so many times. And if it were left up to me, I probably wouldn't have picked it up if this was the cover. But it is very distinctive, like you said. It is very distinctive and even iconic in a way because A Wrinkle in Time is so influential. So yeah, really interesting episode. I'm glad that you found that news story. I'll also include a little book riot post we did that just goes over, kind of basically ranks the Wrinkle in Time covers throughout the years. So that's a fun little addition to this.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that book has not had a lot of great covers over the years.
No, it has not.
Like,
it has not.
The original cover is not bad with like the rings.
Yeah.
And then it just felt like it got progressively worse. And then like only recently have like the covers improved. So that is good. But yeah, I think like the Wrinkle in Time was like, you know, the book that a lot of people when I was growing up were like, oh my God, this book is so amazing. This book is incredible.
Yeah.
This book is influential. And I'd look at the cover and I'd just be like, nope. So
it doesn't match it. The one I'm used to, that I'm just like used to seeing, I think, because we use this edition in our class, is number 10 in that list. It's kind of folkloric looking.
Yeah.
Picture frame.
That one's a bit better.
Yeah. You're like, that's an improvement.
Right.
But yeah, a lot of these covers, I feel like they're nice to look at because, you know, the artist who did them has, you know, artistic skill and stuff like that. But I don't know if they really, like, reflect what's inside the book so much.
Yeah. Well, justice for A Wrinkle in Time covers. Like, let's just get it. Let's just get it a good cover and call it good.
Exactly. I agree.
Well, that's really fun. So we definitely recommend checking that out. We are going to talk some more about books. But first, let's hear from our first sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang. So this is an interesting love story. It's great for fans of Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow and High Fidelity. It's set in the mid-90s at NYU. And it follows young Wang, who has gotten the advice of love through Chinese numerology from his uncle. So he believes that he will have 7
great loves in his life. And then he meets Irena in 95. And she's like the best. She's brilliant, charismatic, quick-witted, funny. They fall in love. But the thing is, she's number six. So if he is to have seven great loves, does that mean his time with Irena is going to come to an end? So this is a love letter to Western pop culture, Eastern traditions, and being a first-generation New Yorker. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Sourcebook's Landmark. So King Solomon says something very interesting to his son before he dies, and that is, quote, "Don't let the white man take the house," end quote. These, as I just mentioned, are King Solomon's last words to his son as he dies. Now, all four Solomon siblings must return to North Carolina to save the kingdom, their ancestral home, and 200 acres of land from a development company. Told in alternating viewpoints, Long After We Are Gone by Tara Shelton Harris is a searing portrait of the power of family and letting go of things that no longer serve you, exploring the burden of familial expectations, the detriment of miscommunication, and the lessons and legacies we pass on to our children. It's an explosive and emotional story of four siblings, each fighting their own personal battle, because who isn't, who return home in the wake of their father's death. Make sure to check out Long After We Are Gone by Tara Shelton Harris, and thanks again to Sourcebooks Landmark for sponsoring this episode.
Okie doke. So before we dive into the meat of our episode today, I wanted to let you know about something cool going on at Book Riot. Book Riot's editorial team is writing for casual and power readers alike over at The Deep Dive. So you can find weekly stories that inform and inspire readers drawn from our collective experience as power readers, teachers, librarians, booksellers, bookish professionals, etc., etc. So recent stories for free subscribers have included like a history of chain letters, which, you know, were quite the thing back when we were kids. Behind the scenes look at Book Riot's managing editor, what her day in her life looks like, the anatomy of an Obama summer reading list, and more. So paid subscribers also get access to exclusive content, including a mega list of books our readers think you should add to our TBR, and access to community features, including the ability to comment. We haven't had a comment section in Book Riot in a while, so this is the only way you can comment. during the month of September, all new free subscribers will be entered to win Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler, plus 5 mystery books from The Deep Dive. To enter, simply start a free subscription to The Deep Dive. No payment method is required, so you can go to bookriot.substack.com. It's bookriot.substack.com, and no purchase is necessary to enter. So hopefully you check out The Deep Dive.
Yay! I just wrote a post for The Deep Dive that is a free one about Beyonce and Western lit.
Ooh.
And how those two things connect. Yeah.
Fine.
So not gonna be okay. Yes. It was not just an excuse to talk about Beyonce, but also kind of maybe an excuse to talk about Beyonce.
But also if you needed one.
Yes. If you exactly. I'm glad you understand me. But yes, check it out.
Yay. All right. So today I'm kind of excited about our topic today. Another great Erica topic here. We are going to be talking about the independent publishers of YA. Before we dive into that, though, I want to just like make a little quick sort of distinction here. So when we talk about indie publishers in this episode, we're not talking about self-publishing. And sometimes indie publishing kind of gets used interchangeably to mean like both independent publishers and also self-publishing. So what we're talking about today is indie publishers, which are small publishing houses or presses that are independent from major corporations, and they are putting out some awesome, awesome books. So if you're not familiar with publishing, and this might be a little bit more publishing insider knowledge than maybe you want, so I'll try to keep this brief. But basically, in publishing in the US, there's what's known as the Big Five. And they used to be the Big Six, but now they are the Big Five. And they are like the five major publishing houses in the industry. So they are Simon & Schuster, Macmillan, Hachette, Penguin Random House, and HarperCollins. And they are, you know, they're pretty big guys. They are owned by major corporations, and they put out lots and lots and lots and lots of books with many imprints each year. But they're not the only, you know, game in town, which is good. And one of our Book Riot contributors, Kendra Winchester, has a really great piece on the importance of indie presses, especially in our current publishing landscape right now. And Erica has dropped the link to that in the show notes. But there are also some really great smaller presses. Some of them are smaller publishers, but they still, you know, are like affiliated with like a larger corporation. So not exactly independent. But then there's like a lot of really great independent presses that are putting out a lot of really great books. And I mean, if you don't pay attention to like who's publishing your books, which like would be fine and legit because there's a lot of them out there, you know, maybe you won't recognize these names, but you'll certainly recognize the books that they are putting out. There's so many great ones. And I think like you and I started talking about this, like we were both like, oh, there are definitely a lot of independent publishers of YA out there. But like I if you had been like, how many are there, Tirza? I'm not sure if I would have been like, oh, there's this many. But when I was sitting down to like make the list for this episode, I was like, wow, there's more than I think I first realized.
Yeah, same. And I'm glad you had compiled that list, because as I was saying before we started recording today, I had a couple in my mind when I thought about this topic, and they are really like killing it.
Yeah.
But I definitely didn't think of all of these. And sometimes, even as someone who works in the book world, such as myself, sometimes it's hard to keep track of who is still indie and who hasn't been like absorbed by a bigger, you know, big five publishing house, which is fine, of course, but it's just like, and then the big five, they all have like their own imprints. Sometimes like some things I was looking up, I thought like, oh, this is an indie press. And then I find out it's actually an imprint of one of the big five or something, which again is fine, but it's just, you know, it's a little bit of stuff to untangle. Yeah. It's a lot going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. Well, and like, yeah, that's a good example of that is Running Press, which used to be an independent press out of Philadelphia, and they have since been purchased by Hachette. So, you know, the Running Press, like Running Press Teens, like that's a YA imprint. They're still putting out books this year. Like they have a new release out this month called Fault Lines by Nora Shalloway Carpenter that looks amazing, but it's technically, you know, part of Hachette now. So we didn't include them. But and then there was one house that I was like, oh, I seriously thought that was an imprint of a larger house. And then I was surprised to find out that they were independent. And that's Holiday House. And they put out children's books. And they put out a book that I think we just talked about last week, The Fall of Whit Rivera by Crystal Maldonado. So that's the publisher for that. Let me just go through some of these because you'll probably start to recognize. So Quirk Books, you will know them by their most famous YA series title, which is Ransom Riggs, Miss Peregrine's Home for Something Children. How am I blanking on this?
Oh my gosh. I know we're both blanking. Miss Peregrine's Home for Wayward. Is it Wayward Children?
I want to say it's Wayward, but it's something. There's an adjective.
Peculiar children.
Peculiar children. Peculiar. Thank you. Yes.
I think there's a Wayward in Seanan McGuire's.
Yes.
One of those books. Okay. Yes. So, Peculiar children. I had to Google it.
Quirk Books has, and they publish more than just Miss Peregrine's, but that was probably like the most famous. Chronicle Books out of San Francisco, they mostly do like stationery and gifts and like art books, but then they also have a children's book imprint, and they do have some YA. It's not, I would say, super extensive, but some of their YA that they have, they're like, you know, award winners, and so they're pretty well known in that regard. Like Eric Gansworth's Apple, Skin to the Core, which was a Prince Honor and a National Book Award finalist. That is a Chronicle book, so that's pretty awesome. Page Street is relatively new, And they have been putting, and I say relatively, like they've been around for probably like the last, I don't know, 6-7 years. They've been putting out some really good YA stuff. Same with Peachtree. I think Peachtree has been around for a little bit longer, but they've really just started branching out in YA within like the last 5 or 6 years. And they're out of Atlanta. And I know that one of their earlier YA books was like they were licensing Australian YA and they were bringing it over to the US, which is pretty awesome.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I want to say too, like that is the cool thing about some of these indie presses is like, yes, they are, you know, acquiring new and original work by YA authors here in the US. But some of the important work that they are doing is bringing over, you know, Australian or UK or Irish voices that, you know, they aren't licensed to be published here in the US, and the big publishers aren't necessarily, you know, picking them up. And then that's what some of these indie presses are doing, which is awesome.
That's what kind of like one of the things that Kendra Winchester in the article she wrote talks about as being one of the reasons, one of the benefits of smaller presses, which is taking a risk on books that bigger publishers might not take a risk on, as far as like, say, if they need to be translated, they're coming from maybe even another English, majority English speaking country like UK or Australia, but just hasn't been, you know, brought to the American audiences. And then also they take more chances on books by authors from marginalized identities too. So
yes,
that's, her article is great. So read that, but that's just like a little preview, a little excerpt from, some of the benefits she listed as belonging to, or just like the good things that we get out of smaller presses.
Absolutely. And like that brings me to one of the newer ones on the list is Levine Curido, which was founded by Arthur A. Levine, who was a Scholastic editor for many years. And so he has founded this press, this indie press, and they have been killing it with their books lately.
They have been killing the game. What?
Like,
they have been so many award messing winners. It up in the best way. Side note, I just realized, because I have, I know we looked at a few books ourselves, and we listed a few from these indie publishers. But I'm also on the Levine Curido website just to look at like more of them. And I just realized that, okay, so this is a little side note, but I volunteered as a mentor for this nonprofit organization called Girls Right Now. Have I talked to you about them before?
Yeah, you have. You mentioned it before.
Okay, so it's basically like, just for people who, I don't remember when I mentioned it, if we were recording or not, but just so you know, they are a nonprofit organization based in New York City. So they pair potential mentees, I think the age limit is like 24, people who are interested in writing, and they do girls and other gender minorities, non-binary people, trans people, stuff like that. And they help you, like whatever kind of writing you want to do, whether it's poetry, fiction, nonfiction, or career, like, you know, college applications, career stuff, any kind of writing, they pair you with mentors. So I was a mentor. And so for last school year, we all had our groups, like we had different cohorts or whatever, just to make it more wieldy, because there are a lot of participants, a lot of mentees, a lot of mentors. I'm saying all this to say that on the Levine Curido site, I just realized that one of my fellow mentors was published by them, because I'm on the site.
Cool.
Yeah. She was hella cool. Her name is, so the book is called What the Jaguar Told Her. Her name is Alexandra V. Mendez.
Oh, that's so funny.
That's why I was like, oh, wait, I know her.
Yeah, they've been putting out so many books, and so many of them are award winners. Like we talked about When Angels Left the Old Country by Sasha Lamb. Like that's one of their books.
A Snake Falls to Earth by Darcy Little Badger. A Lots Away by Darcy Little Badger.
Yes. And they've been publishing so many translations too, which is really exciting. Mm-hmm. So just really doing exciting stuff.
Absolutely.
Another indie publisher, Lee and Lowe, they are pretty well known in the industry for being an independent publisher that focuses on diverse children's books, which is awesome. And so they put out YA books. And then one of their imprints, which used to be its own indie press, but has been since absorbed into Lee and Lowe, is Cinco Puntos Press, which has been putting out some really great YA, like hard-hitting, mm-hmm. incredible. They started in Texas, I believe. So they have like a focus on like Mexican-American and sort of like that borderland experience, like fiction that really speaks to that. But that's not the only stuff that they put out, but that's kind of like what they have been putting out. I mentioned Holiday House. They also do great children's books. There's Orca Books. They're out of Canada. I'm not as familiar with their books because I think it's a little bit more Canadian focused, but they are some good ones. Yeah. And then, Entangled Teen, which you probably have heard of because they publish Tracy Wolf's Crave series, which has been incredibly popular. I have not read it, but it's the one with the Twilight mm-hmm. lookalike cover. So, yeah, there's just a lot out there.
Yeah, there's a lot, thankfully. Absolutely. And supporting these presses means they can release more. It's just good. Like, I'm just like for more books. And yeah. I love, like, the big five publishing houses obviously love a lot of the books that they put out. But indie presses, like, you know, you have different people with different experiences who we'll see a book, like see the potential in different kinds of stories. So it's just like, you know, even more different stories from what we're used to. So absolutely. I'm all for more books, even though I know I can't read them all, but I want them.
Yeah.
And I will have them.
And I think, you know, there are some, you know, that are smaller than others for sure. Like mm-hmm. one book that we didn't really talk about as much in my huge list right there is Sourcebooks. They are technically indie. Yeah. They were started in Naperville, Illinois. The reason I didn't mention them is because they've gotten really big and they put out a lot of really great YA. Everything from like, you know, Rachel Griffin's books to, you know, Claire LeGrand's YA fantasy. Like they put out a lot of really good stuff, but they have gotten mm-hmm. pretty big, so much so that I believe this has how it used to be. I'm not sure if it's still now. Their editorial department is actually based in New York City, even though everything else is based in Naperville, Illinois. So
they're big.
Yeah.
New York is expensive.
Right. What? New York is very okay. expensive. So
they've made it. So maybe they're going to be, maybe we're going to go back to having six major houses with them once they get to that level, which is good because it's like, you know, capitalism, you don't want a monopoly of stuff because then.
Right. And you know. I think there's really like, speaking as an author, but like also mm-hmm. as somebody who's invested in like the publishing industry as a whole, like I think it's really good that we have like a mix of like large and small and medium publishers. Yeah. And I think there absolutely needs to be room in this industry for like a thriving economy of small indie presses. Yeah. But yeah, like some of the challenges which you kind of touched on there is like, you know, indie presses don't have the same budgets that like HarperCollins will have. So like if you've got this like hot new debut and like an indie press wants it, but so does somebody at HarperCollins, like, well, HarperCollins will be able to outbid an indie press anytime. And so, you know, sometimes, like you said, indie presses are taking chances on things that like bigger presses, bigger publishers won't necessarily do. But there's a lot of mm-hmm. benefits to going with a smaller press and working with like a smaller mm-hmm. team that's a little bit more focused on like you and what you're doing. But I also am happy to see like when an independent press like Sourcebooks, you know, gets in that game and they do really well. And and I'm like, you know, I don't know as much about business side of publishing as I do, you know, the craft side of it. But
same.
It's nice to see. I think it's good to have a variety. And so I'd like to see more of these indie presses succeed. And I mean, some of them, like we said, like they're really putting out some amazing books that are getting a lot of hype and just as much hype as, you know, some of the books that are coming from big presses and have big marketing budgets. So it's really great to see.
Yeah.
A lot of times these indie presses, sometimes they kind of struggle for a while without getting a lot of attention, but then they start to become more notable because they'll get like one best-selling title that really elevates them, mm-hmm. or like a best-selling author or series. And then, like, you know, some are also known for just like sticking with a certain type of book, like Cinco Puntos mm-hmm. Press. Like, if you looked at their list, at least their list from, you know, a few years ago, you could see that they put out a certain type of book and they do it really, really well. And that's kind of how they get known. A lot of times, another way to elevate their image is, you know, they tend to be award winners, like Living Kirito, we mentioned, just really killing it with all the awards. So yeah, it's just really interesting to look at the landscape of all of this.
Yeah, and I agree. I want there to be a variety of presses, like a variety of size as far as presses are concerned. Small, medium, large. I think that it's just the best for readers and the reading economy, I guess. As
it's good.
Were.
It's good for authors too, I think, I think there's like this misconception that, like, you know, if you go with like a big five press, then, like, you know, you're going to be making lots of money. Your book's going to get a lot of marketing attention. But then the reality is, like, you are like one drop in a huge sea of releases, and you don't always get like those benefits. But then, you know, if you're going with a smaller press, when you're like, you know, one of four books being released this season, like, you're going to get a lot more personalized attention and marketing help in that way. So, the experiences are just going to differ, but I think it's good for authors as well as readers.
Definitely, definitely. They're just good. Support indie publishers, in conclusion.
Yes. So, on that note, we're going to tell you about some indie published YA books that we think are really great and that we think that you should read. But first, let's hear from our next sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Greenleaf Book Group. No summer vacation should be without a great read, and I don't know about you, but I am partial to mysteries and thrillers for my hot month reads. It's hot girl reading summer, always over here. And from the award-winning librettist of Legally Blonde, the musical, and the screenwriter of Freaky Friday, Heather Hawke, comes the page-turning psychological thriller, The Trouble with Drowning. So when author Eden Hart floats into Tucson's Antigone Books in all her dazzling perfection to give a reading, Kat, a struggling writer, can't help but compare herself. Thankfully, Kat's life starts to take on its own Eden-like glow when her literary future takes shape and she falls madly in love with Jacob. As demons from her past begin to surface, Kat's mental health craters, and this halcyon dream slips through her fingers. For the fastest-paced, slow burn you won't be able to put down, be sure to check out The Trouble with Drowning by Heather Hawke on Amazon or your retailer of choice. And thanks again to Greenleaf Book Group for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Avid Reader Press. So this next book is a really fun sounding mashup of different genres. There's a little time travel, a little romance, a little spy thriller action going on. So in the near future, a civil servant is offered the salary of her dreams and is shortly afterward told what project she'll be working on. A recently established government ministry is gathering quote unquote expats from across history to establish whether time travel is feasible for the body, but also for the fabric of space-time. This is an exquisitely original and feverishly fun fusion of genres and ideas. The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley asks, what does it mean to defy history when history is living in your house? Colleen Bradley's answer is a blazing, unforgettable testament to what we owe each other in a changing world. It kind of gives Outlander meets Cloud Atlas, or If the Time Traveler's Wife was written by Sally Rooney or Colson Whitehead. Make sure to check out The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley. And thanks again to Avid Reader Press for sponsoring this episode.
Okie doke. Erica, what do you have for us?
Okay, so before we started recording today, I was telling you, Tirza, about how I got this big old juicy box of books from Levine Kirito, which I'm really excited to read. A lot of these books I haven't started yet, but they're on my list. I have the advanced reader copies and they sound so good. So this is not Levine Quirito. Levine Quirito. This is Peachtree, actually, the first book I'm going to speak about, but it is titled A Warning About Swans by R.M. Romero. And I mentioned an R.M. Romero book, I believe, when we were talking about Jewish books. She did a novel in verse. She is Latine and Jewish, I believe. So this new one came out July of this year. And it's described basically as Swan Lake meets The Last Unicorn. It's kind of like got some Brothers Grimm fairy tale realness going on. It takes place in Bavaria in 1880. And this girl, Hilda, was dreamed into existence by the god Odin. And she has like five, six sisters. They can transform into swans. So right there, it's giving, you know, mythology. Obviously, Odin is from Norse mythology. But that also kind of gives tease of like, I think how Athena was born. I'm giving side notes anyway. So she goes on this journey into the afterlife, the other wood, as it's called. So she has to fit in at this court, and like she has to kind of find her way back to the human world where she will not have to guide souls again. So it's like kind of like a retelling with different elements of other mythology. And I'm like not super familiar with the Swan Lake story, but I am like a little familiar, but it just feels very familiar all in general because like overall, I mean to say, because there are so many elements of like classical Western fairy tales and stuff like that. And so it just sounds really interesting and I'm excited to read it. So again, this is A Warning About Swans by R.M. Romero.
It's a great title.
Yes, it is. Swans are dangerous.
You know, I respect all birds that are large and, you know, live in bodies of water. I just stay away.
That is a very specific and yet accurate yes. Just yes to that.
Tell me you've been chased by a goose without telling me you've been chased without by a goose. Without telling me you've been chased by a goose.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That is so funny. Geese are also a hot mess, but yes.
Yes. Stay away.
Stay away from the geese.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So, okay. My next book. Okay. I'll focus here. My next, my book, it is Get It Together, Delilah by Erin Goh, and it is published by Chronicle Books. And I love this book so much. I'm so like tragically sad that it's not like better known. Erin Goh is an Australian writer. So she actually has another book that has been, you know, published here in the US by a big five. It's called Amelia Westlake Was Never Here. Was one of my favorite books of a few years ago. Get It Together, Delilah is Erin Goh's first book, and it luckily was brought here by Chronicle Books. So thank you, Chronicle. So it is about Delilah. She's 17. She is just with her dad because her mom has left them. And her dad owns this cafe called The Flywheel. And her dad's not in a great shape since her mom left. And so she convinces him like, hey, you should just go on a trip, get away, you know, fix your broken heart, blah, blah, blah. And she is living in the apartment they share, and they have this manager of the Flywheel who is like kind of looking out for the cafe, but also looking out for Delilah. And he's only supposed to be gone for like a little bit. But then, you know, her dad is delayed in coming home, and he doesn't come home. And then the manager all of a sudden disappears. And so it's up to Delilah to basically keep the cafe going, but she also has to start school. And there are these people at school who are bullying her, partly because she is queer, and there's just a lot going on. And it's just this like really great coming of age story about Delilah and trying to, you know, keep it all together. And she always feels like she's not doing enough, and also dealing with like a lot of problems while also crushing on the girl next door across the street who dances flamenco every night. So lovely. I really liked this book a lot. And the cover is really cute too. It looks like a cafe chalkboard with a coffee splattered coffee cup on it. So it is Get It Together, Delilah by Erin Goh, a really great LGBTQ YA book, and also set in Australia, which is fun. So that's my first pick.
That does sound really fun. I have not read, I was going to say, a lot of queer YA from Australia. I don't know if I've read any YA from Australia, actually.
I love Australian YA. Oh my God. I'm going to make you
do a show.
I was going to make you do an episode on Australian YA with me, because I think Australia is putting out some of the best YA that is like fascinating and like creatively, like taking on a lot of creative risks and just being really cool. But tragically, a lot of it does not get published here because the US market is pretty oversaturated with our own stuff. So yeah, I'm going to get off my soapbox, but I do love Australian YA.
Off your Australian soapbox. I've read Australian fiction, but just not YA. It's been adult. And it was interesting. I definitely felt there was a distinct difference. So that was an interesting experience. I, of course, am open to whatever you have to suggest and recommend for me to check out. But yeah, that sounds really interesting. So funnily enough, the next book I have is also a queer story. And I feel like it takes place, well, for me, it takes place in a place where I don't usually read about. So it's titled The Queer Girl Is Going to Be Okay by Dale Walls. And it's about this girl, Dawn. She's queer. And she wants love. Like, she's just like, I want to be in this like loving relationship. She really wants that, but she does not have it. And she thinks like, okay, if she can like capture it on film, she wants to make this documentary about it. Maybe if she spoke to people who do have queer love, like maybe she can get closer to actually having it. So she wants to make a documentary about queer love, and she wants this documentary to help her win a scholarship to film school. So obviously making a movie is tough, especially as a high schooler. So this book is about that process and the process of her finding herself and finding love, because obviously she wants it very badly, but she doesn't know how to go about it and how to orient herself in that way to receive it, I guess. And she has some besties, Edie and Georgia, who are there to support her, and they support her and they're supportive. So that's good. So this is, again, this is one I haven't read. I just got the advance release like yesterday. So I'm excited to read it. Yeah, that's what I said. I said, ooh, because I forgot the ones I had asked for. So it really was like Christmas. Like every time I get like a new book, it's like Christmas. Every time it never gets old. And sometimes I forget which ones I asked for. And each when I open them, I'm like, ooh, I make that exact noise, the exact noise that you made. So this is being described as a really like moving and joyful story of queer friendship and girlhood, which I love. And relationships, romantic relationships are important, but we have spoken many times about the importance of friendship. So we have queer friendship here, which is great. And back to the place setting, it takes place in Houston, Texas. I haven't read too many queer YA stories that take place in Texas. So although it's still, you know, United States, it's not Australia, you know, but it's Houston. I'm like, I just feel like I haven't read too many stories that take place in Houston. So it's supposed to be fun, sad, touching feeling, all of that extra good stuff. I'm excited to read it. Again, it's called The Queer Girl Is Going to Be Okay by Dale Walls. And that's just like an encouraging, like, you know, we all just want to be okay. Like,
yes.
I feel it. So I'm excited to read this one.
I also love the title. It's very much like, okay, yes. This is going to be good.
Yes, we got this.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, my next pick is Gabby, A Girl in Pieces by Isabel Quintero. And I think I've talked about this book before on this podcast because I love it so much.
Yes, I remember.
Yeah, came out from Cinco Puntos Press in 2014. Of course, Cinco Puntos is now part of Lee and Low, but they're all still independent. So Gabby, A Girl in Pieces. It is a epistolary novel. It's written as Gabby's diary. And what I love about the way this is written is it feels very realistic, written as a diary format, not just like, oh, here's a book that I'm writing as a diary, but like, my character is going to write all of these like beautiful entries about, you know, their life that are very expository and make you feel like you are reading a novel. No, this book is a little bit more raw. It's very much just like immersing you into Gabby's world. There are some really hilariously short entries that I'm like, yep, that feels realistic. But it is about Gabby and her senior year of high school. And so Gabby is fat and she knows that like boys don't tend to look at her the way they do like her thin best friend who's really pretty. And so this book is about, you know, her, she's figuring herself out. It's a beautiful coming of age story. She's got a lot going on in her life. She's, you know, figuring out if she's going to go to college, where she's going to go. She's trying to get more independence from her mother, who is terrified that she'll end up, you know, pregnant, a teen mom. Meanwhile, her best friend does end up pregnant, and her other best friend comes out and is kicked out of the house. And so she's dealing with all of these things on top of the fact that, like, she's got this flirtation with a new cute boy, and her father has a drug addiction that she is also, you know, very much affected by. And she also just loves foods, but she feels like she needs to be thin. So there's a lot going on. She discovers poetry, and that helps her really find her way. It's such a good book. The cover is a little weird, but once you've read the book, the cover makes complete sense. Mm-hmm. It's just so great. So that is Gabby, A Girl in Pieces by Isabel Quintero. It's won a couple of awards. I cannot recommend it enough.
Yes, I remember speaking about that book, especially because the cover was so like visceral and kind of jarring.
Yeah.
But when you described it, it's like, oh, it makes a lot of sense. So I like, again, you know, indie presses taking risks on things like that, artwork and covers and all that good stuff. So next one I have sounds like it's so unique and just like really interesting. It's titled The Prince and the Coyote by David Bowles. It's illustrated by Amanda Mijangos. And again, I have the advanced reader copy for this. So there are illustrations within it, but they're not colorized. Illustrations in my book are black and white, but the illustrations in the final copies, I was told, will be in color. So that's cool. So the setting for this, another very interesting setting. This takes place in the year 1418 in pre-Columbian Mexico. So, and it's also actually based on like a real ruler from that time. So it follows 15-year-old Akol Mitzel, who is like the crown prince. He's in line for the throne, and he is, this like, I don't know, what's it, like a Renaissance? Not a Renaissance man, he's 15, but he's kind of like, he's a singer, he's a poet, he's philosophical, he has all these ideas for how to make his city and his future throne, like, better for his people. He has these ideas for infrastructure, cultural initiatives, all that stuff. But the both sides of his family have been kind of at war, so I guess his mom getting with his dad didn't help. I know usually in, like, royal stories, it's like, you know, if you have two sides who are warring, if there's a marriage, it kind of brings them together, but not, that's not the case here. So there's a power struggle. His father gets killed. And so then he and his mother and his siblings go into exile. So they're like running for their lives. And so he runs into the wilderness to escape being killed. And after a coyote helps him like to survive, he takes on a new name. And this is like, the names are from an indigenous language and called Nahuatl. So he takes on a new name and it's Nezahualcóyotl. And that means fasting coyote, or Neza for short. And so as with this new identity, he steps into a new identity, basically. So Nezha now, he is plotting to take back his throne. He goes undercover. He makes alliances, reconnects with his family. And he also actually ends up falling in love with a commoner girl named Sekali. So his uncle is... he has to go up against his uncle, basically, to regain the throne. His uncles are scheming, they're plotting, and for the empire, for control of the empire. So this takes us on his journey to regain his empire. And so there's a lot of action in it. It also has a blend of prose and poetry. And one really interesting aspect of this book is that the author translated surviving poems from the real ruler, Nezha. Like, you know, like I said, he was a poet, a philosopher. And so the author translated from the indigenous language, some of the poems from the real person. So I felt like that was super cool. There's also some queer love stories in it. I'm just like, I don't know the last time I read a pre-Columbian Mexico YA story with indigenous poetry. I mean, like, it's just, I'm excited. So again, that's The Prince and the Coyote by David Bowles, illustrated by Amanda Mijangos.
Awesome. Yeah, David Bowles has put out some really amazing work. A lot of it has been through indie presses. Like, some of his earlier stuff was Cinco Puntos Press as well. So that sounds amazing.
Yes.
My next pick is Forgive Me If I've Told You This Before by Karelia Stets Waters. And it actually is from a press called Ooligan Press, which is a university press, which is something that we didn't really chat about because there doesn't tend to be a lot of YA put out by university presses, but they are also considered, you know, mm-hmm. indie presses. And so this one is a university press out of Oregon. And it's like the MFA students that help put these books out. And so that's really cool. And I read this book a few years back, so I'm, you know, not super fresh on all the details, but I remember really enjoying it. And Karelia Stets Waters has since put out some queer romance from, I believe, Berkeley. So that's been, you know, published by Big Five Press as well.
Nice.
But this book is about Trino, and she is this teen in the early 90s. She's living in Oregon. She lives in rural Oregon, and she definitely stands out. Like, she's always dyeing her hair. She wears all black. You know, people kind of see her as the alternative girl. And she is bullied horribly, not only by people at school, but also by her very own principal. So the administration is not nice to her as well. And throughout the story, she realizes that she is queer and she has relationships with other girls. And she's, you know, figuring out who she is, both from sexual orientation point of view, but also just like who she is as a person. And the cool thing about that is that she discovers a queer community in her rural Oregon town. But also the not so cool thing about that is this whole story is taking place against the backdrop of an important referendum that is going to be putting to a vote in her community. And the referendum is very homophobic. And so, of course, it's bringing a lot of attention to the community, and LGBTQ rights are being discussed quite a bit. And so, you know, not only is it hard to kind of figure out yourself, but like also doing so in a very political way when it feels like, you know, her identity is being up for discussion in her town when it should really just be hers mm-hmm. and hers alone. So it was a really, really great book. I think if you liked The Miseducation of Cameron Post by Emily Danforth, that this would be a really good read-alike. So it is Forgive Me If I've Told You This Before by Karelia Stets Waters.
When you first read the title, I was like, it's okay if you told me you can talk about it. I was like, it's fine. Tell me about it again. What is it? I was like, oh, that's the name of the book. Great, great, great.
No, that's just the title.
Yes. Got it. Gotcha, gotcha. I understand things. Yes. I forgot to mention, I will put this in the show notes, but I think I forgot to mention the press the other two books I just spoke about were, and they were both Levine Quirito. So there's that.
Awesome.
Yes. So excited to read those. Last book I have to talk about today is titled When a Brown Girl Flees by Amna Qureshi. and it is by Lee and Lowe Books. So this is about a girl, Pakistani girl. She's Muslim. She's a hijabi. A hijabi is just someone who wears hijab. And her name is Zara. So something happens where she makes a decision that is not quite like in line with how she grew up and like what she currently believes. So it's a very confusing time. Her mother is controlling and she forces Zara to make a choice about her future. And so Zara is just like stressed out and there are some, you know, heavy feelings to deal with. So she runs away. So she takes a plane, finds herself in New York, right? So now she is kind of like trying to forget what happened and also trying to find herself and also trying to find herself like basically without being controlled by her mother. Trying to find out who she is herself without other people's influence, I guess. And so she winds up on Long Island like you do, I guess. I have my time in Long Island. I guess it's just where you go when you're trying to figure things out. She's staying at a bed and breakfast. And again, she's trying to work out things. She's depressed. She's anxious. She is just, she has a lot of guilt. And she's kind of just walking around without direction. And so she eventually wanders into a place that's called a masjid. And she becomes friends with two sisters. And the local Muslim community welcomes her. But then a friend of her family recognizes her and she's like, oh crap, are you going to tell my mom? And she's like, will this new like identity, this new place I've been building for myself, will it all come crashing down with this? She knows she can't keep running away from her mother and her family, but because that's just not going to help. You can't keep running away. So she has to, I guess, kind of bring in her past with her present and like mesh those two things, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So the author has, yes, some real stuff over here. So the author has an interesting note that she put on Goodreads, actually. First, she gives some content warnings for depression, anxiety, emotional abuse, physical abuse, self-harm, suicidal ideation, slut shaming, and PTSD. And she talks about how she first wrote the book when she was a senior in high school. And kind of going through a lot of issues that Zara was going through as a Muslim, as a Pakistani American, as a woman who wears a hijab and all that stuff. So she also goes on a little more to just describe how this book is very personal to her. So I thought to include that, and it's on Goodreads if you want to read it. She described the book as being a love letter to oneself, herself. So yeah, it sounds really interesting. I really enjoyed when we read, oh, I'm blanking. What was our book club read by Sabah Tahir?
Oh, All My Rage.
All My Rage, yeah. That was, you know, just really good. And for me, I don't know a lot about Muslim culture, Muslim American culture. So that just gave me great insight into that. And I feel like this will as well. So I'm really excited for it and I'm happy to be able to share it today. So again, this is When a Brown Girl Flees by Amna Qureshi.
That sounds so good.
Yes.
So my last pick is also a book that has not come out yet, but it is coming out very, very soon. It is Before the Devil Knows You're Here by Autumn Krauss.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about that if you didn't.
Oh, God. Yes. It comes out October 3rd, and the cover is beautiful. So this is coming out from Peachtree, and it, like, shows this girl. Her, like, eyes are peeking through, and then there's, like, a bloody hand on the cover, and there's apple blossoms and branches, and then there's, like, a bunch of apples on the cover that like show the progression from like a nice, beautiful round apple to like more bites taken out of it until there's nothing but an apple core. It's got a lot going on, but like it really works. So it is, the publisher's pitching it as like a blend of tall tales and Latin American surrealism and also gothic fantasy. So yes, please.
Oof.
Yeah.
Chef's kiss. Honestly.
I know. It's historical. It's set in 1836 Wisconsin. It is about Catalina, who is biracial. Her mother was, I believe, Mexican, and her father is white. She is living with her father and her brother in this cabin in the wilderness. Their mother is no longer with them. And it, like, survival is really tough because it's winter and things aren't good. So unfortunately, her father falls sick. He dies. And then this strange man creature comes out of the woods. Mm. And he's, like, covered in bark. He's, like, you've got sap and leaves everywhere. And he takes Catalina's brother with him. And so she has to go into the woods to bring her brother back. And along the way, she meets a lumberjack who tells her about this man of sap and the sort of, you know, creature he is. And there's curses, there's spirits, there's all sorts of really interesting stuff going on. So I'm really excited for this book. It's also being pitched as like good for fans of Maggie Stiefvater and Aaron Craig, if you like that sort of like folkloric horror fantasy.
Yeah,
definitely going to be a really good pick. I did start reading it on my Kindle the other day. I got an advanced copy, and the first few pages were very compelling, so I think that this is going to be a very good book. So definitely definitely keep your eyes open for that. It comes out October 3rd. I've been hearing a lot of great buzz about it, which is awesome.
That reminds me, I was asked if I wanted a physical copy, and the answer is yes.
Yeah, it's so pretty.
Yeah, it's so cool. And the story is like, ugh. If you're a seasonal reader, just in time for spooky season.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm super excited about that one.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that is all I have for you all today. Do you have anything else you wanted to add, Erica?
No, that's it. Great roundup. Great selection.
Such a good roundup. And I hope that, if anything, this podcast episode inspires you to go pick up some good independently, you know, indie press or independently published YA. Because there's a lot of great stuff out there. And you've probably already read some and not even, you know, realize that it came from an indie press. So that's also exciting.
Right.
But yeah, thank you for tuning in, and please feel free to leave us feedback about the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, because it helps us know how we're doing, but it also helps others to find us. And if you want to get a hold of us directly, you can always email us at heyya@bookriot.com. Don't forget to visit bookriot.com for newsletters, podcasts, all things bookish, and bookriot.substack.com for the deep dive. Thank you to today's sponsors for making the show possible. And thank you, as always, to our amazing audio editor, Jen Zink, for making us sound great. You can follow me on Instagram. I hang out at @tearsofpraise. What about you, Erica?
I'm on Twitter.
You said that so sadly. Like, I'm on Twitter.
@Erica_EZE_ I notice how you don't mention Twitter anymore. That's why I said it like that.
Technically, I do still have a Twitter account, but I have not touched it in weeks, if not months. So yeah, that's all right.
I feel you.
Nobody holds it against you.
Thank you for understanding.
It's hard to give up.
It is.
All right. Well, we will be back in 2 weeks with more things bookish. But until then, happy reading.
Happy reading.